You're listening to Fight Back on WCRS FM 98.3 and 102.1. This is Dr. Bob Chagas in the studio here, 1021 East Broad Street, and we're going to talk about the Keystone XL Tar Sands Pipeline. I'm not overly familiar with it. I've been hearing about it, and we're lucky to have Alec Johnson in the studio. Why should we care about the Keystone XL Pipeline, Alec?
Well, you know, we've heard for some time now about our addiction to dirty oil. And, you know, it's obviously still going on. And Dr. James Hansen, you may recall, he was the NASA scientist that the Bush people tried to shut up, who wouldn't allow himself to be shut up. He's pointed out that these tar sands are, he calls it, the largest carbon bomb in North America. When we talk about our addiction to dirty oil, think of it as a habit. This pipeline is like a 1,700-mile-long dirty needle to support this addiction. And, you know, if I can, obviously that's a metaphor, but in reality, what he said that is that if these tar sands are significantly developed, it will be game over for climate. Game over means game over for all of us. I mean, this is extremely serious. What makes this interesting is that President Obama, all by himself, gets to bless this pipeline. He gets to say it's in our national interest. And I'm here to tell you, Bob, that global warming is not in this nation's interest.
Well, in the past, reports have come out from the risk assessment people at the Pentagon who argued that the climate chaos is more of a threat than terrorism, the single largest threat to the people of the United States. Why would then we want to go and give ourselves a little tar sands bomb thing, a little dirty bomb?
Well, I think that part of the answer is, I mean, as I'm sure you're aware, of the top 10 corporations on the planet, six of them are fossil fuel corporations, and I understand that every single one of them has serious skin in this game. And, you know, I mean, there's an enormous amount of money. They're developing something, I've heard it's either the size of England or Florida, take your pick, up in Alberta. I mean, it's huge. It's the largest industrial project going, and they all are interested in having this happen. On a larger scale, you know, like the 100,000-foot view, we have a system that is addicted to cheap oil, and it's going away, and they're frantically, desperately looking for it everywhere. I mean, they're trying to find it 3 miles underwater in the Gulf, and we saw how that turned out. They want to, you know, drill in the Alaskan Wildlife Refuge, and that's just nutty that we're talking about a 6-month supply of oil that's all going to be shipped to Japan because that's where it's near. But these tar sands, I mean, this isn't really even oil. This is bitumen, you know, that is in tar. And, you know, obviously they can eventually turn it into oil, and they're, investing a lot of money, but it doesn't make a lot of sense for we the people. It makes sense for, you know, these corporations that are hoping to make a lot of money on a resource that's going to get more expensive. So,
when I hear about tar sands, the only thing that ever pops to my mind is the La Brea tar pits. What exactly is a tar sand? Is it actual tar?
Well, actually, I have to tell you, I haven't seen it yet, but I can tell you what I know, okay? What's sort of really unfortunate about the tar sands is that they are underneath the boreal forest, and the boreal forest is one of the last intact biomes on our planet. In order to actually get at these tar sands, they have to literally scrape the entire living forest off the top of this stuff. They then divert rivers, you know, to actually get the sand out of the oil. They then, you know, pass this sludge through the pipeline. And by the way, these pipelines are extra high pressurized. And although, you know, TransCanada is assuring us that we won't have any problem with their 1,700-mile pipeline, although they already
have
one.
Well, they never leak, do they?
Well, actually, that's the bad news, is that they've already built one. It's a smaller pipeline, and it has had 12 leaks in as many months.
You know? Well, one per month, doesn't sound too promising.
No, it definitely isn't. And, you know, and one of the things that we're being sold is that this is a job creator. And I got to tell you, it's hilarious.
Well, yeah, just fixing the leaks is going to require an army of people.
Well, possibly, but also if you want, I mean.
And then cleaning up the spills is going to employ people.
Yeah,
not in the way we want them employed. But
yeah, no kidding. But it also, I mean, if you wind up having a serious spill, you can wipe out economic activity in a large region. One of the reasons we should be very concerned, though, is that a big hunk of this pipeline passes over the Oglala Aquifer. And for those who don't know, this aquifer is like the largest, you know, aquifer for fresh water on the planet, and it's the largest aquifer in the United States. Millions and millions of our fellow citizens depend on it. And if there was a serious burst in that, Lord knows how many people could be contaminated by this stuff. So it's incredibly dangerous. The other reason why this is sort of, you know, just something that should be opposed by every American is that the oil that's being produced isn't for us. We're being told this is about our energy security, that we're getting ethical oil from, you know, Canada and da, da, da. But in fact, we've seen the contracts. Most of this oil is going to be refined and sold overseas. So the United States is going to bear all the risk of having this stuff, you know, transported 1,700 miles, you know, across our nation, and it's across our heartland. The other thing that's really weird is that people, you know, farmers in the zone are discovering that a foreign corporation is using eminent domain to seize their land. They're basically saying, hey, you got to sign a deal or we're going to use eminent domain. We're going to get it for pennies on the dollar. So it's, you know, I mean, there's some serious resistance that's already mobilizing in the heartland. This weekend, I think, you know, we discussed that we're going to have this giant action. We're going to be having about 4,000 or 5,000 people encircling the White House. And I'll tell you, there are people from Kansas who are heading out there. Before I came here, I spoke to a fellow named Pipeline Al, and I believe he's a farmer in the Nebraska area, and he's traveling all the way from Nebraska. You know, they've got a whole carload of people, and they're not going to stop, and they're going to get to D.C. to make sure that the president understands that the heartland doesn't want this thing built. So.
Amazing. So Keystone XL pipeline sounds more like the Keystone Drillers, like the Keystone Cops.
Yeah, it does, doesn't
than
it?
And a serious undertaking.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's part of the reason that Bill McKibben launched this action in the first place was that he had a conversation with Dr. James Hansen about the tar sands. And that's when James Hansen said, listen, if they're significantly developed, it's game over. And at that point, Bill McKibben figured, well, listen, we've really got to do something to stop this pipeline. I agreed with them totally, and I was arrested on the first day of the action, August 20th, and the police decided to try to discourage, you know, further demonstrators, because we told them it was going to go on for 2 weeks, and they kept me, Bill, Gus Speth, and about 45 other people in jail all weekend long, and I got to tell you, it was the full medieval tour. Nothing was excluded, including leg irons, which I thought was really kind of wild, you know. I mean, we were so dangerous, we had to be, you know, gartered by leg irons. Also, Lieutenant Dan Choi was with us. But one of the things that was very interesting that happened in that cell block was that Gus Speth and Bill McKibben had a conversation. They said, you know, we really have to get the environmental movement behind us on this. And they came out after they got released, and they sent a letter to all the environmental organizations in this country. And they said, listen, you may not agree with our direct action methods, but you have to agree on this issue. And in fact, they got statements from every major environmental organization in the country. And so right now, you know, the entire environmental movement is united and speaking with one voice, telling the president that if he wants support from people who care about the environment, he better, you know, not bless this pipeline. So it's been a very interesting development.
But I've been seeing commercials on TV that says this pipeline is the greatest thing in the history of Earth. It's going to make us energy independent.
Well, you know, I'm sure it's no surprise to you or the listeners of this station that pretty much the way you can tell when the fossil fuel industry lies is every time their lips move. You know, this is just absolutely, this is false on so many levels that, you know, it's not to be believed. But of course, it's interesting. I've seen these ads. You know, ExxonMobil has very clean looking people and, you know, it's very clean shot, and they never actually show you what the tar sands look like. I've seen what they look like. They look like Mordor. I mean, they look like, you know, a scene out of Lord of the Rings. It's, you know, it's just amazing. And, you know, there's a reason they don't show you this, because it looks like anything but dirty. And here's the real tragedy, is that this is killing people. This is literally killing indigenous people up in Alberta. I had a friend who was also arrested with me on day one. He's this charming fellow named Kurt Morrison. And if I could, I'm going to plug his blog, The Louisville Courant. He's a really great guy. He got arrested on day one, and he was Bill McKibben's cell block mate. So he had a really interesting, you know, time there. He got so inspired. And I mean, before then, his focus was on Louisville politics. But he really started having like a national, international perspective. He went up to Ottawa. There was a tar sands action up in Ottawa. And afterwards, he emailed me and said, you know, Alec, I'm amazed at not only, you know, how threatened the indigenous people here are, but the leadership that they're displaying, you know. And I've been talking about deep green resistance, which we may get to later. And he said, I sure hope deep green resistance, you know, is interested in indigenous leadership. And I was pleased to be able to tell him that we want to actually follow their lead, that we think that we should take leadership from them because they've been in this fight for so long. So it is an international fight. It's not just, you know, south of the border. There are people north of the border. Also, because the Canadian owners of these tar sands are so eager to have them developed, they have been trying to punch a pipeline to the west out to the Pacific. But that goes right through indigenous land, and the indigenous people are making it abundantly clear it's just not going to get built. I mean, they're going to stop it with their bodies if they have to, but that's not going to get built. In fact, just yesterday there was a piece in the Financial Times, or the Financial Times equivalent in Canada. I can't remember the exact name of the journal. And they were quoting industry people up there who were flipping out because, thanks to our actions, this issue is now toxic. We spoke to people, we had sort of friends in the White House who were telling us that before this actually, before we started protesting it and organizing this nationwide opposition, that it was a done deal. And now it's anything but. And the people up in Canada are afraid they're going to have their lovely tar sands landlocked. And frankly, I think that's where it ought to be. Mother Nature put that stuff in the ground for a reason, and it ought to stay there. So.
And again, I'm reminded of the Lakota and other Native Americans that have terms, my favorite being Matakawasi, which means all my relations, not just between humans, but between what we call the biosphere, between the land and the water and the air, and that it is all related. Which gives them a different perspective than I suppose BP and the other oil companies.
Well, of course, their model, the free market economic model completely excludes nature from even being considered. I mean, it's just not even on the balance sheet.
But they call it an externality.
They certainly do. They certainly do. But here's what these externalities amount to in serious terms. Every day, about 200 species go extinct. And that's a tragedy. Because, one of the things that the theory of the Darwin's theory of evolution tells us is that if you take any two organisms, us and anything else, somewhere in the distant past, we have a common ancestor. We're related to these, these creatures that are dying. I mean, I understand that 83% of our DNA we share with the banana, for crying out loud. So, it's like we are related to everything, and it's a real tragedy that our footprint on the Earth now is wiping out 200 species a day. That's just ridiculous, and it has to stop. And that's why I'm proud to be part of Deep Green Resistance Ohio. Deep Green Resistance is a national organization. I don't know if we want to start talking about
that. Okay, sure. Yeah. Let me, what I'm thinking about Deep Green Resistance is this similar to Deep Ecology?
Well, Deep Ecology, wasn't that Bill McKibben's book? Now, don't tell Bill I haven't read it yet. So I can't honestly answer it. But, Deep Green Resistance is a new radical environmental movement, and our goal is to deprive the rich of their ability to steal from the poor and the powerful of their ability to destroy the planet. And we're using a multi-pronged approach. Now, I don't want to get down into the weeds in it here. We'd wipe out the interview. But if I could, I would encourage your listeners to go to deepgreenresistance.org. Again, deepgreenresistance.org. We think it's time for those who are occupying indigenous lands to make real sacrifices and a real commitment to support these communities and find out how we can help them and do so with our bodies and our lives. This tar sands issue is centered around, supporting indigenous communities. To be effective, we think our movements have to move beyond symbolic to sustained action, direct action at the site of industrial destruction. And we have a plan to do this. So.
Are you talking about nonviolent civil disobedience?
Yes,
the tradition
yes.
of Gandhi and the civil rights movement?
Well, I'm not so much sure about Gandhi, but, Deep Green Resistance definitely advocates nonviolent resistance. But we think that we need to kick it up to a whole different scale. We need to move beyond symbolic actions. In fact, one of our heroes is Tim DeChristopher. You're familiar with Tim DeChristopher?
Remind me.
Okay.
I remember the name.
Well, Tim DeChristopher, he was like a 29-year-old econ student in Utah. And towards the end of the Bush administration, he found out that the Bush administration was doing a little sweetheart deal with their buddies in the coal and gas industry. And they were going to auction off a whole bunch of pristine Utah land that actually belongs to us. It's managed for us by the Bureau of Land Management. And so he went to this auction, and he was determined to do everything he could to stop it. And apparently, at one point, he saw a friend of his in the audience, and after they bid, some oil company got a huge, lovely parcel of land that she was intimately familiar with, she burst into tears. And he knew he had to do something, so he grabbed a bidder's paddle. It was number 70, and from that point on, he bid on every block of land available. So,
You're listening to Fight Back on WCRS FM 98.3 and 102.1. And we support these bidders, so he's bidding against the oil companies. I do remember this story quite well. I think I caught up to him when he was in prison, was he not?
Well, he's in prison now. But back in April, he addressed the PowerShift conference in D.C., and it was I was there, actually. PowerShift is a major convention of the youth climate movement. It's put on by Energy Action Coalition, and they're really trying to build the youth climate movement. And, you know, I got to tell you, I mean, obviously, your audience can't see how much gray hair I have, and maybe they don't know how much you have, but here's the thing, is that for years and years, you know, I've been an activist my whole life, and I'd show up at things and be just us older people, but I've discovered that where the young people have really taken off is in the youth climate movement. That's where they are, and this is a huge conference, 10,000 of them. The conference goal was to train 10,000 young activists, and that's how many were there. At this conference, we had an evening's presentation. You had Al Gore, more on fire than I've ever seen him before. Then you had Bill McKibben, more on fire than I've ever seen him before. And this stranger that hardly anybody knew, named Tim DeChristopher, took to the stage, and he gave a speech that blew those two guys out of the water. And part of the reason that it did was that he was facing serious prison time, and he was challenging the youth climate movement to be a whole lot more serious about what we have to do. And he said, we got to stop making statements and start making a stand. And this man had the moral authority to make that statement. He had the moral authority to say, listen, there's little about the youth climate movement now that, you know, would give us, it would indicate that we're actually going to rise to the challenge. We have to do this. And he suggested a model for doing it, which Deep Green Resistance has basically, you know, embraced. We think it's a really good idea. He made the point, you know, he was saying that already in our nation, for the sake of our comfort and convenience, we've pretty much written off Appalachia and its people, you know?
Little mountaintop removal, never hurt anyone, right?
Right, right, yeah, of course. I mean, yeah, I've driven through it. I got to say, it's nightmare.
Rubblization?
Rubblization, right. It's pretty nutty. But he said that, you know, he addressed these 10,000 people, and he said, you know, listen, without recruiting a single other person, we could stop mountaintop removal. If we sent 30 people down to a site, you know, clogged it up, got arrested, clogged up the court system, and then sent another 30 and another 30 and another 30. Eventually, we would challenge Barack Obama. He would either have to send the military to Appalachia.
Which has been, because they're rubblizing Blair Mountain, which is the only place in the U.S. they've ever bombed their own citizens from the air, giving us the term redneck. But that's the great site after Sheriff Hatfield was killed, standing up for the indigenous people, 10,000 Appalachians wearing red handkerchiefs tried to march on the Capitol, and they're rubblizing that mountain, which you can find on the History Channel over and over again. They're taking this historical site and pushing it into the valley and ripping the coal out of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm thanks for sharing that, because I didn't know. I'm a big student of history, and I love hearing these things. So
yeah, that's where the actual term red. And again, you've got a mountaintop state that's going to be without mountaintops.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, and you know, it's interesting to think about it. I mean, nobody would think of doing this like in the Sierras. You know, I mean, so we've already, for our comfort and convenience, we're prepared to sacrifice the people of Appalachia, and that's just unjust. That's just not right. And DeChristopher's point was that if we really step up to the plate, if we're really prepared to, you know, make serious blockades, to do something beyond what's symbolic, we might actually achieve something. And achieving something is something that we really have to do. I mean, we're running out of time. I have a friend in town who's a climatologist, and I wanted to sort of assure myself that my climate science was, you know, that I understood it. And I said, I guess you guys are really flipped out about the methane cycle. And he said, yeah. He said, basically, we've got like 10 years, maybe 20, to actually make serious emission reductions, or we're toast. So it's we're way beyond needing to make symbolic actions. And we have an opportunity. I mean, by the way, the tar sands isn't just this pipeline. In Toledo, BP is trying to extend a permit for a plant they have there, the BP Husky plant, to process tar sands oil. So it's happening in Ohio. Of course, you know, fracking is a whole other thing. I should also mention that I'm part of the Stop Fracking Ohio group, and at the end of November, there's the natural gas industry is coming to Youngstown, and they're having a conference, and they're going to be pushing fracking left, right, and center. And there's a group that's going to have a huge presence there to remind the public that this is not a good idea. So I just thought I'd mention that, November 30th.
And again, those of us who have seen Gasland.
Oh, yes.
Not a good idea when your water catches on fire.
No kidding. Josh Fox, by the way, was arrested with the tar sands action on, I think, September the 1st. In fact, he encouraged all the people who were concerned about fracking to show up because he definitely saw that these issues are... I mean, it's the same problem, you know, just manifesting differently.
Okay, but where would we get our energy if we don't get it from these tar sands and from fracking?
Well, I think really big picture, and a lot of people aren't going to like this answer, is that we have to use a whole boatload less. You know, our energy footprint is huge. Now, you could argue, oh, well, we could replace it with renewables. But here's the sad fact is that even if we massively deployed renewables, there isn't a renewable energy base that's going to allow us to have this level of consumer culture. Whether we like it or not, civilization is about to be downsized. And we have two choices. We can either have that be achieved very gracefully, or it's going to be achieved sort of like in biblical dimensions on steroids. But it's going to be achieved. We are going to be living in a post-carbon culture. That's our future. And we have a choice about how we're going to get to it. And part of what's problematic, of course, is that very, very powerful organizations, you know, companies, governments, you name it, are determined to prevent us from taking the reasonable steps that we need to take to get to where we need to go. And so we have to sort of simultaneously, you know, create, you know, a new society, a very different society, and also fight for the political space to allow that to occur. I mean, it's when you think about all that we have to accomplish, it is unprecedented, you know, in scale, scope, and time frame. Nobody has ever had to do what we're doing. And, you know, the sort of, if you want to look at it as a sort of a sad thing, all the previous generations didn't know this was happening, and future generations aren't going to be able to fix it. It's on our shoulders. We don't do it, it doesn't get done. Now, the way I look at it is that this is actually a blessing, because I wake up every morning knowing that I'm working on the most important thing in human history. And I know that might sound a little grandiose, but I'm not kidding. I mean, you know, trying to solve this problem, biggest problem our species ever faced, and we have to solve it in next to no time. So, at the end, I mean, what I get and what I would encourage your listeners to consider is by taking on board this defining challenge, you get to have an exciting life, you know? And who doesn't want that? So.
Well, the great peace activist and leader, socialist leader Norman Thomas, before he died, once said the thing he wanted to convey is how much fun it was and how satisfying to fight for social justice. That it was something that he actually absolutely enjoyed, that it wasn't a burden. But can you think that way when you're in leg irons?
Well, actually, I was pretty weary when I was in leg irons. I hadn't slept for days. And but yeah, I mean, you know, even though I was very uncomfortable, we all were, and we had a lot of uncertainty about what was going to happen to us. You know, I mean, sitting on a bench, you know, with Bill McKibben and people like Gus Speth and others, you know, and Lieutenant Dan Choi, you know, I mean, and there was this tremendous solidarity. In fact, I can tell you that, you know, all of us who were arrested, I mean, we have some very strong fellow feeling about each other because it was very unpleasant, and yet we were able to, you know, keep each other in the game. We looked out for each other, and I feel tremendous respect for these people. And yeah, to answer your question, you know, I like what I get to do, you know, but it's not about me. The reason why I like it is precisely because it's not about me. You know, it's about something much bigger and more important than me. You know, I think a lot of people in our culture, which emphasizes self so much, we get into this ego prison, and we're not able to, you know, to really understand what is really satisfying about being alive. And I think what's really satisfying about being able to live is to serve something much bigger than yourself, is to kind of lose yourself in the work that you do. So, but.
And what's going to happen this weekend?
Oh, yeah, I'm glad you asked. This weekend is very exciting. In fact, I'm leading a bus from Columbus. Ohio has three buses, at least, that I'm aware of. By the way, to all of us Ohioans, okay, we should really pat ourselves on the back, because Ohio has been at the forefront of this struggle since August. We're probably going to be fielding more people. We've definitely had more actions in this state since the August action. The president came to Ohio twice, and he was bird dogged twice. I was there both times. We've had more visits to his campaign offices than any other state. And we're probably, like I say, going to field more people. But to tell you what's going to happen is that on Sunday, we're going to be encircling the White House. It's never been done before. And I think it was, in fact, we got a little letter from Tim DeChristopher in prison saying that, you know, it's kind of it's going to be a little intimidating for Barack Obama to find himself encircled. And it's a good thing because he should realize that his job is on the line. So we're going to have, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 people. I understand we're going to have miles and miles of placards and banners. It's going to be visually extremely interesting. It is a nonviolent action. We're not expecting to be arrested. I mean, if they're foolish enough to arrest us, it's just going to give us more ink, you know. But it's going to be very exciting. People across the country are going to show up, and you can find out more about it at tarsandsaction.org. We want to get, if anybody listening to this, if you want to get down, you know, we want to help you get there. We want to have as many people from this state show up. And part of the reason that we want, you know, Ohio to, you know, sort of shine is that not because we want to, you know, be the best state, but we want to challenge the other states to rise to the high bar that we've set here, that Ohio activists have set. And I'm very proud to be
Well, Alec, does that have anything to do with Ohio's a key battleground state? And it's, and essentially, no Republican has ever won the presidency without winning Ohio, and only one Democrat in modern times, John Kennedy. Mm-hmm. So it's, you're in the key battleground state.
Oh, here, yeah, we definitely were aware of that. And we're also in the state that has the worst air quality in the United States.
Sued by other states and Canada, which right. is going to give us tar sands.
Right, right. And we're the fourth largest emitter of greenhouse gases. I mean, you know, it is definitely.
And we're doing well in acid rain, aren't we?
Oh, I think so, yeah. We're hitting, you know, and of course, well, we got Governor Kasich. He's toxic all on his own, so. But.
So, why Ohio? Why does Ohio have so much activism?
Well, you know, it's interesting. You know what they say about grapes and wine, that, you know, that the best wine grows in really hardy, you know, tough soil. And so adversity builds character in grapes and activists, I would like to argue. You know, so, yeah, I mean, we have to be tougher here because this is a tough state.
And any support from the unions? Many people have
Well, it's sort of it's sort of divided. Laborers International is for this pipeline. However, the transit workers and another transit union have come out against it. Part of the problem, though, is that, you know, they're talking about jobs. They're actually lying about jobs. They're saying this is going to create 20,000 jobs. It's not. In fact, in order to make that claim, they ran their time frame out 100 years. I mean, nobody does that. They say over a century it's going to create 20,000 jobs. It's ridiculous. In fact, the EPA, when they saw, you know, the results that the State Department were sort of, you know, throwing around, said, no, wait a minute, tops 2,500, maybe 4,500 short-term jobs. In fact, this pipeline is going to be a jobs killer, you know. I can tell you for a fact that if we capped carbon, if we basically made carbon the pollutant that it is and prevented the oil companies from externalizing it. Remember, every day, 90 million tons of carbon pollution goes in the atmosphere, and we're going to pay for that one way or the other. But if we cap that, here in Ohio, we could create 67,000 good-paying jobs with career letters. And these are jobs that you cannot send to China. You know, I mean, so it's, we have everything to gain by moving in this direction. So,
and again, where can they go for information?
Tarsandsaction.org for that action. And for Deep Green Resistance, I really hope you'll visit our website, deepgreenresistance.org. If you want to contact us, deepgreenresistance@riseup.net. Again, deepgreenresistance.org and deepgreenresistance@riseup.net.
This is Bob Trakis in the studio with Alec Johnson. Check out Deep Green Resistance and stand up to the Keystone XL pipeline. It's been a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure being on your show. Thank you.